And welcome in the latest installment of Tony Talk right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Our weekly visits with the Hall of Fame manager are presented by our friends at Marie Davila Senior Living, Triad Bank, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, and Be the Match. And we begin with Tony, and it's August, and I think historically people that follow the game of baseball and maybe that play it, we always talk about the dog days, and September's not here yet. Is that an accurate phrase for teams when they hit August?
Well, it's accurate if you define dog days correctly. You know, I'm a dog and cat guy, so a dog day makes me happiest. And the reality is that August and September, especially if your team is in contention, is the most exciting, the happiest parts of the season. The way I was always taught, you know, you break the season into thirds. You know, April, May, it's fresh. Everybody was tied for first on opening day. Then you get going, kind of see where you are compared to everybody else. The really tough, and I don't say dog days because that's a compliment, the toughest parts of the season are June and July, because then you're playing a lot of games. The heat starts to come up. It's not new anymore, and the end is not in sight, and you really have to grind through. The weather is probably an issue quite a bit. But right now, you get to August, like the Cardinals are here, and they're smelling the chance to win the division, get the wild card, whatever it is. The Red Sox trying to get back in there. These are the best times. They are dog days, but that means that they're the most exciting times.
Well, I should have thought of the ARF theme in saying that dog days will never be used as a negative on this show, not as much as we both love dogs. But it is August, and I wonder if some teams, we talked about it at the trade deadline, but every once in a while you get a kid from the minors that comes up. Historically, even in St. Louis, years ago when I was growing up, like Willie McGee arrived mid-season. Vince Coleman came up during the season. Can you remember some players when you were managing that they came up, and not only the good players, but just kind of added a little spark, a little something to the room?
Well, you know, the majority of the spark that came was we were in contention and a trade was made. So, but it is true that you can look at your farm system, and a couple of quick examples that come to my mind with the St. Louis Cardinals were 2001, when we were having real problems with our starting rotation staying healthy. We got Jason Sumitachi, and he came along and was really a lifesaver because we ended up getting in there at the end, tying for the division lead, and you know, we had to play division series against Arizona. So Jason came in. If you look at his record, you know, he won a bunch of games, pitched really well, pitched with a lot of composure, and he was a real lift. The other spectacular example, Martin, and I've said it many times when I'm back in St. Louis from 2006 on, you think about the 2006 World Series, there's a guy named Chris Duncan that saved our season literally, because by the time that, you know, we had a really good lead, like 6-7 games, as we got into August, latter part of July, and everybody started getting hurt, and we were really shorthanded, and Chris came up in sometime June, July, and hit 20 home runs from there to the end of the season. When, as all fans know, we got in the last day of the year, so probably the most spectacular example that I can think of in all my managing career of a guy who came in through the system and really jump-started our offense and got us into the playoffs was Chris Duncan.
I guess it's a challenge, too, in your room, because the young kid comes in, even if he plays well, that means somebody's out of the mix, out of the lineup, so it could probably cut both ways where there's excitement. Hey, we got a new kid, he's helping. But then somebody loses at bats, and maybe they're not happy about it.
Well, most of the time, you know, it comes up because of an injury, and you know, you're pleased. The other one, you know, we talked about it recently, and we talked about it enough. But you know, Rick Ankiel came up and gave us a lift, even though we didn't get into the playoffs that year. He sparked us. So most of the time, it's an injury. Then you know, another way they come in there is that they were playing so well that they earned a spot on the roster, and that's the reality that everybody faces, you know, a manager, coach, but especially the players. You know, you ought to go out there with the urgency that you're playing for your life every day, no matter what you think your situation is, or maybe you don't look for depth at your position. The reality is that if somebody is better than you in the system or some other system that you trade for, you're going to lose your job. So every at-bat, every inning that you pitch, you know, you ought to take that with the urgency, man. I'm going to prove that I deserve my spot on the roster.
An interesting topic in St. Louis, talking about the Blues and their roster for next season, primarily the same. And the question is, can you do it again? How hard is it to repeat? And there's a lot of examples where it rarely happens. And with the Red Sox, they're the world champions. How tough is that? You've managed three championship teams, had to come back the next year. I don't know that's the hangover effect, but how challenging is that for a team to get up and do it again?
Well, the first thing you're going to hear from the players is, we want to repeat. And, you know, and I'm not saying talk is cheap, but it's just, you know, an instant response. But what you have to understand is that how deep you have to dig within yourself to start every day of camp like you did the year before, where you start at zero and you're trying to build. And what usually happens, and it's all frame of mind, human nature. You remember how you ended up, the glory of how you got hot there at the end and take it into the playoffs and you win the championship, and you're still celebrating the next year at camp, whether it's spring training or if it's, September for the NHL, whatever it is. You walk around, the fans are, they're still saying, hey, man, you guys are great. So to get that same kind of hunger and that same kind of focus is very difficult. And then there's another PS in our world. In fact, I remember reading a book, Showtime, by Pat Riley. He identified something called the disease of more, and you see that. And that is the same guys are all for one and one for all. Then over the winter, their family or agents say, hey, you need to start getting more fame and fortune. And now they start thinking about, well, I need more for me instead of we. So it's all about what's in the mind. It doesn't happen automatically, and it rarely does. That's why, in our area, which is Boston now, the master of it is Bill Belichick. And if you talk to him about it, boy, he literally starts everything at zero and will not allow any reference to the past success, unless it's something that helps you, that you learn to make you better. So, yeah, the Blues, trust me, the first time in their history, they've got a huge challenge to quit celebrating. They can celebrate now, but when they come to camp, man, they got to be ready to start at zero.
Is there such a thing as the target on the back? I mean, the Red Sox are a famed franchise, so it's not a surprise. They've been winning a bunch, the last couple of decades, really, at this point. But does something change about how you're competed against because you got the title?
Yeah. You're going to get some automatic teams that get ready to play you. If they're going to have a sluggish week, sluggish series in a week, it won't be the series that they play you or the game they play you, depending on what your sport is. So, that's part of it, rising to the occasion. Once in a while you'll have a team, maybe they'll just collapse because you're the world champion, but it rarely happens. You'll get the best from everybody, and that's another part of the challenge.
Are you a fan of run differential as like an indicator of a team being really good? Like you look at the Dodgers, they have an unbelievable season, and then the run differential is absolutely off the charts. I think our good friend Joe Strauss always said he thought it was a fair indicator. You're going to have a game or two that, you win 13-1 or lose 13-1, it's going to could be disproportionate. But by this time of year, it seems to be the teams that are really good are real high in that category. Is that ever been an indicator for you?
Well, I think it's legitimate. It's just that you have to, like everything else, you need to analyze what's legitimate about that particular stat. Because run differential means usually if you have a big one, it's because you score a lot of runs and you have a pitching staff that doesn't allow much. Well, suppose you have a pitching staff that doesn't allow much, and you have an offense that doesn't score much. Well, you can win a lot of games by one or two runs and get yourself into the playoffs. So I think you have to analyze the stat and apply it. Like right now, the Red Sox, our offense has got a lot of, good-looking stats, but there are too many games we get beat, where our offense, just isn't as productive. So you got to be careful with every statistic or any supposedly saying that baseball, it's all about one game at a time. You look at what they mean and try to figure it out and then apply it.
We talk about the trade deadline last week. Cardinals came up empty at the deadline. Boston was also quiet. Is it different, though, because you just won last year in terms of maybe fans, media, the reaction? you have a certain equity because you're coming off a championship. Whereas in St. Louis, people are real restless and saying it's been a while, not only since they've won a title, but also being back to October. But I'm curious, in Boston, is the reaction different because you won so recently?
You know, I learned sometimes that you have to differentiate the response of the fans and the response of the media. And sometimes they're together. Like, you know, I don't know what's happening in St. Louis. But I know in Boston, for example, the media is very upset that the Red Sox did nothing. In fact, they ignore the fact that Dave traded for a fifth starter early. Dave has a habit of, when he sees a problem, he attacks early. That's how we got Eovaldi and Pierce last year, for example. So they're really not happy that we didn't do more. I think the fans are more patient because they see it. So in Boston or St. Louis, I mean, is it the fans are upset? Is it the media that's upset? Are they both upset? I know that the Cardinals want to win, and the worst thing that you can do is make a move for cosmetic or public relations value. You know, you'll make a move and, oh, yeah, they did something, and all of a sudden when they see that pitcher or player out there and they see what it cost them as far as a prospect or whatever, if that guy isn't real productive, you're going to get ripped. So what you need to do is you need to be very strong-minded and tough-minded. If there isn't a deal that makes you better, then you're better off not making a deal for just for PR value.
You know, you mentioned a friend of Tony, Bill Belichick, earlier. You're in the same area, same town now in Boston. His quarterback, Tom Brady, just re-upped. He's currently 42. I think he's looking at least another year or two at QB. I'm trying to think of baseball guys who got into late in their careers, and I think you had some lefty relievers who could pitch. I think Rick Honeycutt could probably still get somebody out. Tony Foster could probably still get somebody out. You marvel at all at a guy playing at that level that can do it at that age. I'm just trying to think of superstars. Some guys hang around and we see them, you know, fading at the end of the career. Can you think of many that were really at the top of their game at that age?
Sure. I saw Tom Seaver, saw Carlton Fisk. Harold Baines, actually, you know, he played till 40. He played 22 years. So Dennis Eckersley, he was pitching at 40. I think, Cal Ripken. I think the key is that there are at least two. I'll make them a little bit more simple. It's probably more than this, but you have to want to compete and to enjoy the competition and the succeeding to where every winner you pay the price of getting yourself in shape. And as you get older, you got to work out smarter and better than what you did when you were younger. Then the other side is, if you got that going for you, were you smart enough when you pitched or played that you really learned your craft? And that's why, you know, a hitter whose bat has slowed up can be a better hitter because he's smarter at the plate. He knows how to anticipate, knows how to handle different pitches, what he swings at, what he doesn't. Same thing with a pitcher. You know, I saw Tom Seaver win his 300th game, when he was, in his late 30s. And he, he didn't throw that overpowering fastball, but he had all these other things that he did to get hitters out. So I just think it's a combination of being willing to work out and the smartness of knowing. You know, Albert Pujols is having a big year because his legs are healthier, and he's got, 70 RBIs, and he's got, he's been very productive. So, but, I wanted to make a point, though. To me, with all that Tom Brady has done, I mean, it's just been amazing to watch. It's so much fun, and you respect and honored. To me, the thing that I think is the most important thing that he's done is that he's always been very aware that what his contract does, if he squeezes more money, that's less money to build that roster, and he has been very generous and smart with allowing the Patriots to use some of the money that he could have bargained hard for and gotten a more complete roster, and it's paid off his Super Bowl wins. And I think it's a real lesson to everybody that, you don't have to get the last dime, unless you're a tennis player or a golfer and you're out there by yourself. But if you're a team guy, you better understand that extra X millions of dollars you get, that comes from someplace. And it's going to make less of a roster.
And it's a great point, because competing at a high level, still playing at his age, arguably the greatest football player ever because of all the titles and everything he's done. And yet, you're right, not going for every doubt. There's plenty of money there, and we're still talking about huge contracts. And I just get the sense in New England, like, it's his personality, but it's also, and I think Bill Belichick has established, if you don't do that, you may not be here long. Like, if you don't play ball, it's just not going to work here. That's kind of almost their whole theme from top to bottom.
Well, you know, Bill Belichick's a lot like Bill Walsh was. You know, they were famous. You know, they're very honest about the value a guy has, and if they see it, you know, you can't be overly sentimental. You know, you had a teammate that you win with, but at some point, if he's not as productive, you know, you're not allowed the luxury of keeping around a guy and getting beat because of past success. So you know, Bill Walsh and Bill Belichick, you know, they're famous for, you know, maybe turning a player loose a year or two before they've gone in the wrong direction, and they go younger and save some money. But as I say, it's a real difficult now, trying to manage the budget nowadays and being in, you know, scout salary caps and all the other stuff that goes on is a tremendous challenge. But how you assess and evaluate how productive a guy is still at the heart of it. And I think in the end, if you're productive, you try to keep him unless you get, you know, where you get too expensive.
When we come back, a couple of interesting questions from our audience for Tony, and also a Redbird Roulette, the answer that I'm looking forward to. That's next.
Be the Match, a great organization, now a proud sponsor of Tony Talk, our weekly visits here with the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. Be the Match has gotten a lot of attention of late because Layla, the Blues superfan, has gotten a lot of attention. And her story, you know what it is, needed a bone marrow transplant. Here's what takes place. Every 3 minutes in the United States, someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer. They turn to the family first, but 70% of the time, the family isn't a match. In the case of Layla Anderson, the super fan for the Blues, she needed a bone marrow transplant. They went to the registry. That's what Be the Match is all about. They have the donor registry. She got the call. Her family found out she had a match. She had a donor. It saves lives. Be the Match is really a community. It's donors, it's volunteers, it's healthcare professionals, it's researchers. You can get involved. BeTheMatch.org/give. You can make a donation so they can continue the great research they're doing, helping save lives. That's what Be the Match is all about. We appreciate them being a sponsor on Tony Talk.
Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living. Independent living at the Villa Estate. Skilled nursing, memory care. They have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila, you are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run, and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com, we suggest you go online and schedule a tour.
It's Tony La Russa for my friends at Victory Men's Health, where they can help you be you again. If you're dealing with low T, ED, or vitamin deficiencies, make sure to see my friends at Victory Men's Health. They now have two locations, O'Fallon, Illinois, and the new addition in Town & Country. Both offices feel more like a man cave than a clinic. So get yourself back in the game by setting up an appointment at victorymenshealth.com.
One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood-friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64, get to Lindbergh, and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business, and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, 5-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution.
A reminder, each week you can communicate with us. It's TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Dominic, a listener of the show, was asking about the manager, general manager role. Like, how often does a manager have a say, somewhat with acquisitions, but also like when a guy gets called up, when a player gets sent down, promotions, demotions, how much does the manager get involved with that with the GM?
Well, it's a great question, and it really depends on the philosophy of the general manager. General manager is, he's the boss. I mean, he's the boss of baseball ops. He's involved. His responsibility is to put guys in uniform. And you have some cases where the general manager really kind of isolates himself from the coaches and the manager because maybe it's a lack of respect or just ego, you know, and they make a lot of decisions up top, and then they'd say, okay, Martin is coming down tomorrow. You know, we just traded for Martin. And what? Wait a minute. And there are other places that really believe and respect the guys in uniform, and they're going to make sure that they're a part of the process. You know, you're always, and I think that's the one that makes the most sense. The guys that are in uniform, your manager, your coaches, you know, they're watching your team compete on a daily basis down there in the dugout on the field. You see things that you don't necessarily see from upstairs. And then you see teams on the other side, so you'll get evaluation of players or pitchers you'd like to have. So it's very healthy for an organization to respect that kind of knowledge, ask about it, and then you put it together with the other respect part, which is the, you know, the general manager that respect their scouts and what they observe and their opinions. And now, in the last 10 years or so, you know, you have the opinions of the metrics guys. So you want to make look at those, you want to balance all those. But in the end, what you recognize is, I mean, we always felt as a coaching staff that if we, and we always had this, we were always included, but we always knew that final decision, if I wanted Jim and the GM wanted Martin, then Martin was the guy that came on the club. And you say, okay, thanks for listening to us. We'll do the best we can with whatever you provide us.
Any time that you can think of, and maybe it's not player specific, but that you saw somebody tearing it up at Memphis, pitching, hitting, and you said, what are we waiting for? Let's go get this kid. Does that ever take place, that conversation?
You can ask the question, but you know, our relationships were so strong that we knew that the general manager wanted to win as much as we did, and the owner wants to win as much as we did. So if you have a young guy, and nowadays if you promote a guy before you have a real chance to win and you start costing major league time, that's less control that you have over the period of time. So whenever we saw somebody, we would point it out. If the reasoning was, look, you know, we're in third place, and maybe he finishes, helps us finish second, but in the reality, he could help us finish first for longer, then it was always a matter of we trust scouting, we trust player development, we trust our baseball ops, and whatever their answer was, we knew that deep down they wanted to win as much as we had, but they're looking at a more global picture.
Somebody else asked about the Cardinal way, what your take on that was, and I think they kind of sarcastically said, how do we get back to that? How do we regain the Cardinal way? But what does that mean to you when you hear that phrase, and how was it instilled?
I was always very careful with that, Martin, because, you know, it's a little bit, in fact, it's a lot egotistical to think that the way you're playing is so much better and nobody else does it. And, you know, I had come from Chicago, and I came from the Oakland A's organization. They won 3 World Series in a row when I was in the minor leagues and sat the bench there for them. So, the way to play the game is a max effort, and since you're going to have the effort, then you got to add the execution. You got to play the game correctly, avoid mistakes. So the effort comes from, you know, not wanting to half-step and give 3/4 of your energy, but you also had to play the game properly. Proper way to pitch, run the bases, catch the ball, take smart at bats. The thing I knew when I came over there and talking to people like Mike Shannon and Rich and Brock and Gibson and Red, the Cardinals were very dedicated to playing as mistake-free as possible, as tough and hard as possible, and to embrace winning to the best of their ability. So that was George Kissel. We taught the basics of the game so that you were playing the game correctly, and you played it with a ton of effort and a commitment to try to win. But I'm going to tell you, there are other organizations that have that same type of philosophy. Not all do, and that gives you an edge, but that wasn't just a patent that only the Cardinals had, but it's something that the Cardinals have featured for years and years and years, and I'm sure they still do.
All right, let's spin the wheel, play a little Redbird roulette, former Cardinal, and I had the chance to see you two interact in person a couple of weeks ago, Julian Tavares, and I didn't realize... I knew he was a character when he was here. He was only here 2 years, but those are great seasons of 04 and 05. I knew he was a character. I think we had him on the radio a couple of times. He always said something funny, but I didn't realize the relationship you two had. And then I walked over with him. He said he imitates your walk. He was always picking on you, which I didn't know players got away with that. And then you said he's 7-up, right? Tell me a little bit about your blink when I say that name, Julian Tavares.
Well, Julian Tavares was the ultimate competitor. He's tough as nails. I mean, he pitched against us for years, and I never liked to see him because he's out there trying to get you out. And he was not at all reluctant to throw the ball inside, and he pitched whatever role you asked him to. He'd go out there and give you 3 innings, or he'd go out there and get you 1 out. So when we got him, we got a consummate competitor, and he was going to do whatever was asked. I'm out in that bullpen. So on the productive side, he was versatile and very competitive. But then he has a real personality, which you think about all the time he spent together from the first day of spring training to the end of the season or postseason. There's so much time where if you can have some laughs or get silly and just enjoy each other's company, and that was Tavares. He had a real good sense of humor. You could get on him and he'd laugh and then he'd come back at you. And if, when we did it right, we were all family. Like, we used to ride the bus wherever we were going, at the airport, the hotel, or the park, whatever. And the manager, the coaches, we were all fair game, and he was right in the middle of it. So, it was great. That was a wonderful, reunion. We had a great time. And then we were back at the Westin there by the bar, but we went on to about, 1:30 in the morning, and it was even more hilarious because these guys loved each other and they had a lot of fun together.
And Tavares, he was telling me the story when Lloyd McClendon was asking to see the hat, and he said, "I'd pitch for Lloyd." He knew exactly what was going on. And then Julian famously threw his hat into the stands or whatever. And he said after the game, he sent a whole box of his hats over to Lloyd McClendon. Just really a funny guy, Tavares. He calls you my daddy, I believe, is what he said. You said 7-up, though. Explain that to folks. That's an inside joke.
Well, I was kidding him because that's something that Brad Thompson came up with. And a 7-up, he says, because he wasn't the most, he wasn't like the number 1 or 2 or 4 guy. But he was a very useful guy on the club because he's so versatile. But he said, he coined it, and it's so funny I've used it. 7-up, 7-down means that he only pitched when you were up by 7 or down by 7. So just to get under Tavares' skin, I applied it to him as well. But he obviously was a guy that, he came in right in the middle of the heat. And, and he was reminding me, we went through the whole time with Aaron Houston. We get the home run, and he hit the phone and broke his fingers and all that stuff. I mean, this guy was a beautiful character.
Oh, Julian Tavares. Yeah, I can picture that, too. And he wanted to pitch, I think, the next day. Tony Talk, each week, brought to you by Marie Davila, Senior Living, Triad Bank, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, and the folks at Be The Match. Tony, next week, let's hope we're talking about a surging Sox team, a surging Cardinals team, and then dog days will have a positive connotation beyond our furry friends. Let's hope for a great week. We'll talk to you then.
Okay, look forward to it. Thank you.